Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, Father Flager is upset with the ads my pack has been running that I produced. I'll take ownership. He's also upset with the ads. And then you have Governor Spaulding there is upset about the newspapers, and he's not going to participate in debates until the Daily Herald explains themselves. So let's start with Father Flager, and we'll get to the other one. Let's go in order of importance. Father Flager, then the governor.
All right. Well, so Father Flager had a protest outside of the John Hancock, because that's where Darren Bailey is renting a place during the campaign, during the final months of the campaign, or using someone's apartment who lives there, whatever it is. And the main theme, and he had with him mothers who had lost their children to gun violence. The main theme, Darren Bailey, please stop using their pain for votes.
John Hancock Building does not represent Chicago. It represents the elite. If Mr. Bailey wants to immerse himself, give me a call. I'll find you an apartment on 79th Street.
No mom spoke at the event. But the
that's the purpose of your little sidewalk press conference? What is that? What does that have to do with anything?
They just asked, too, that you stop.
So Jelly Belly's estate on the Gold Coast? Is that immersing themselves in the plight of the people there, Father? Give me a break.
And Paul Lisnick from Channel 9, which you told me recently that there's been declared Paul Lisnick Day.
Yesterday on GN News that some alderman, one of the 50 trained SEALs, like sponsored a resolution to declare some date certain Paul Lisnick Day in Chicago? And nobody listening knows who Paul Lisnick is, so I'll tell you.
Yes,
he's
please.
Some like half-ass political commentator GN brought on years ago. He is never – I mean, he doesn't know I've had interactions with Paul. He's a nice guy.
Very nice guy.
The conversation has always been fine. But he's not been in Illinois politics. Some of these – they have no idea how campaigns are run. They don't even understand the culture here, the political culture here, much less to commentate on this thing or that. But I digress. So let's hear from Paul Lisnick on his day.
For certain people, middle-aged, older, the concept of a newspaper and the hard copy carries credibility with it. So the real concern, to the extent these papers contain false information, is that when people get it in their hands, they think it's real, they think it's true.
Yeah, well, that's a big if. To the extent it contains false information, which it doesn't, which I will renew my challenge. Somebody in the press corps or in the governor's world, with all of the pearl clutching and hand-wringing, point out something in the papers that is untrue or inaccurate. I've all the reporting on the papers, and I have yet to see, here's an example of what we're talking about. Here's misinformation. Here's something reported on the issue of crime or COVID, all the different topics that have been covered that is inaccurate.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. Referencing the Paddock publications that you're talking about?
We'll get to that later. I don't want to get to that. We'll get to that. That's a whole nother kettle of fish. I want to stick on Father Flager for a second here and about this using people's pain for a pot. What does he do every day? What does he do every year for all of these press conferences? He is completely a media creation based on preying on people's pain. Because what are all of his gun control ramblings about?
Right, and gun buybacks.
What's the setup for the calls for gun control? What's the setup for it? A victim of violent crime. Every single time. So he can use violent crime to promote his public policy solutions, but and to, you know, generate cash from the faithful. But, you know, me and others can't highlight what's actually going on. So it penetrates, particularly outside of Chicago, into the suburbs, so you understand what we're talking about and what's coming, so you make a better choice, or hopefully you make a better choice come election day. At least you think about it. At least you know what the FRAC, the Safety Act, is and the implications. At least you hear from prosecutors. So he's the great defender of the downtrodden. Lie. You want to talk about misinformation?
All right. Well, he said, stop running and condoning comments and commercials that continue racist stereotyping of the black and brown community.
What is racist? It's just documenting crime.
Right. And the one ad that he's talking about, you can't tell who's black, who's white, who's brown, who's green, who's purple, who cares.
It's so tiresome because all this goes unchallenged except by me, basically. I mean, I don't know about other people that are challenging it. I mean, at least that you know, have a media platform. If I'm missing somebody, please inform me. I'm happy to you know, offer plaudits in their direction. By the way, all this, you know, this is stop using this and racism that. Okay. All right. I'll just to tell stories, which is actually what we're doing. Number 39, just this week, 39 to 41. 39, a 16-year-old boy was on probation for a juvenile gun case and awaiting trial for another juvenile gun case, secured yet another gun, and killed a man during a robbery attempt on Chicago's North Side last month. This is the 39th person accused of killing or shooting or attempting to kill or shoot someone in Chicago while awaiting trial for a felony this year. The alleged crimes involved at least 76 victims, 18 of whom have died. Is that racist? Is that preying on people's pain? Or is that telling you about the system and those in charge of it, and how well it's doing? Number 40.
This year.
Yeah. This is all.
Last year we had 70 plus.
Yeah. Prosecutors say a 17-year-old with a pending gun case in juvenile court got another gun and shot a man at a Chicago gas station. He is the 40th person accused of killing or shooting or attempting to kill or shoot someone in Chicago while awaiting trial for a felony this year. We had 76 victims, 18 who have died. So now that makes 77 victims. Count along with me, 18 of whom died. Number 41. Thank you, CWB Chicago, for your reporting. Here's an outlet that's actually doing competent, important reporting. A convicted felon engaged in a gunfight at the OK Corral, quote unquote, on a bustling Chicago street while he was on electronic monitoring for a felony case. He is the 41st person accused of killing or shooting or attempting to kill or shoot someone in Chicago while awaiting trial for a felony this year. He was with a group of people on the corner of Argyle and Kenmore when a drive-by shooter opened fire about 3 o'clock in the afternoon last month. A 59-year-old man was shot as they exchanged gunfire. So that makes 78 victims, 18 of whom have died. Three more this week added to the toll. 41, I should say, we're up to this year, according to CWB's count. And as you said, Amy, there were more than 70 last year, representing some 118 victims, three dozen of whom died. Who's preying on whom? Again?
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Bill and Glen Ellen.
Yeah, Dan, I know this is a little off topic, but I've been watching the ad for Pritzker about the abortion and how Republicans want to hurt women and everything. I know you have the money and the ability. Here is the ad I wanted to suggest to you while I have a chance. What you should do is find adoptive parents of children who are created through rape and show them in a commercial with their adopted parents, a baby, a young child, and an adult, and explain to them, this is what happens when you allow the baby to live. You know, I thought maybe if I suggested that to you, you might be able to do something with that, because I've seen those ads, and it gets old not responding to them. And you're
well, we, and we, I know. Yeah, we, thanks for the call, but we have responded. We've got an ad up now from Brooke Bellow we talked about last week, and it's running, and it's running statewide, and will continue to run so long as Pritzker doesn't complain about it. Then I got to fight to have it be allowed to continue to run. But Brooke Bellow, who is a survivor of human trafficking and rape, speaks to the parental notification issue, which is the only issue. The only issue with respect to abortion has nothing to do with prohibiting abortion in Illinois, has nothing to do with even heartbeat laws. We're nowhere near any of that. The only issue at bar when it comes to abortion is Pritzker's repeal of parental notification, which is much a parent's rights issue as it is about abortion, and Darren Bailey's position that parental notification should be restored. That's it. Everything else is just demagoguery. And of course it is, because Pritzker doesn't have a record to run on, so he demagogues that issue. Jim, Crown Point.
Father Flager is a glad hander. I saw him get out of his car one time, and this guy did not take the vow of poverty. He's doing pretty good. And if I was him, if he's really concerned, stay in your community and clean it up. Don't be wandering out of it.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point you raise. How have these communities on the south side, on the west side, how have they fared under the wonderful stewardship of Father Flager and the rest of the race hustlers in office and outside of office? The media darlings, the Jesse Jacksons and the Father Flagers of the world. What's the work product after 50 years? Mike in Union.
Morning, Dan. So they're accusing you of race hustling and preying on the victims and such, but in all your articles and newspapers, had you once mentioned a victim's name?
No.
Or are you only mentioning the criminals' names?
Thanks for the call, Mike. I don't mention anybody's name. I haven't mentioned anybody's name except people who volunteer their name and go on camera, go face to camera. Right. Illustrating what is happening so it resonates. And the audience is not the Chicago Press Corps. The audience are people who have their head in the clouds in the suburbs and the exurbs and the rest of the state, who don't have an appreciation for what's going on in Chicago, because people living in Chicago, they have an appreciation for it.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the governor, that would be one Jelly Belly Pritzker, J Belly.
Oh, is that a new name?
That's a shorthand. Announced that he was pulling out of the candidate forum that the Daily Herald is sponsoring, the gubernatorial forum between him and Bailey. Why? We simply cannot participate in a forum organized by the same organization that seems to have willingly shared a postage permit with a partisan political entity dedicated to slandering the governor and his policies.
He sounds like a dictator, a tyrant.
Extreme disappointment and utter shock was expressed by the Pritzker campaign. And then the Daily Herald decided that it was Paddock Publications, the publisher, Daily Herald, decided it was time to let the marionette string show. Now that they have been called out by their boss.
Yes.
And they canceled the printing deal between the newspapers that I'm a part of and themselves. Because they, yeah. They did.
They felt printed, the heat from the big guy.
Paddock Publications was printing the newspapers, and their postage permit was being used, which is all on the up and up, perfectly legal, perfectly fine. That's just a business arrangement.
That's not according to Joan Esposito. I saw her tweet. She called you pink slime.
Mm-hmm. Paddock Publications saying initially, the company does not endorse the content of any of the print jobs it does for vendors, including many newspapers, and neither embraces nor condemns them. It merely prints them. Right. Yeah, exactly. But they're going to go ahead and cancel it anyway. Why? Because the governor told them to. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
But then you had a response, Mr. Proft. Quote, if Pritzker doesn't like a television ad, it must be taken off the air. If he doesn't like a newspaper, it must not be printed or circulated. In short, he is a bedwetting, spoiled brat who thinks an election is about his ambitions rather than Illinois family's aspirations. Very crafty. But yeah. Very true.
That's it.
He's a tyrant. I know.
That's it. The truth.
They don't want questions asked by certain people. They just yank their press pass. His dictatorship, this has been a one-man rule during COVID for the past 3 years.
Executive rules by executive orders
yep.
And lords over the state.
Disaster proclamations 34 months in a row.
Lords over the state with his money from his perch. And the press corps falls in line. Well, okay. Well,
I don't think he's had pushback from the Republican Party. You're the first people that are pushing back against him. And he doesn't like it. He's showing that he's insecure. He's showing that he's fragile and vulnerable, I think, in this election.
So the person who actually runs the papers is Brian Timpone. I mean, might as well, you know.
I know Brian.
He might as well.
He was at my wedding. He was a bridesmaid.
He looked lovely in those bridesmaid dresses.
Yes.
So his longtime friend and colleague and so forth. He might as well join me under the bus. So he's the person who interacted with Paddock Publications. And here's the letter that he sent to them. Just so you get a complete picture that you're not going to get anywhere else, because what are these people reporting on it? No, they don't know anything.
They don't.
Even when they're told something, they can't process it. They don't understand what's actually happening. So what's even the point? This is his letter to the troika over at Paddock Publications. Well, that was gutless. We've printed with you for 7 years. You lobbied for our business. We left another vendor, trusting your promises. Then not even a phone call. I get to hear about this from the media. Oh, then the courtesy of a reader letter after the fact forwarded to me by your assistant. It's funny, I contemplated how you would react once it inevitably leaked to ruling class Democrats that the Daily Herald was our printing vendor, and they bullied you to shut us down. Could you handle the heat? Worth noting that we had already watched Daily Herald reporters write that we shouldn't be allowed to print and mail newspapers, but rather than respond, publicly skewering them for their hypocrisy and defending ourselves, we remained silent. We took the criticism from your inane staff because you were our business partner, after all. That's what business partners do. I also thought of what pulling the work over fears you would cave, as you did, would mean to the great folks in your printing operation who had worked so hard for us over the years. But hey, at least you made JB happy. He is now pleased with the Daily Herald. Rejoice. It's a good letter.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And it's important what he said. A couple things that are important about what he said. One is, for anybody who does business and counts on a trust relationship with business partners, vendor, and contractor, just think about just for strictly from a business perspective. Would you want to do business with Paddock Publications? People like that. And I'm talking about the shot callers. I'm not talking, as Brian mentioned, the good people in the printing operation who did a great job. And we're talking about shot callers here.
And you'll find another company that will print your publications.
Already done.
Okay.
So here's the other part of the statement. The second statement I had to issue after Paddock Publications made it clear what was happening. Little Lord Fauntleroy threw a tantrum and got his way. The Daily Herald is just another staffer in Pritzker's comm shop, which masquerades as the Chicago Press Corps. They were exposed as horror of horrors capitalists. So now they must renounce a longstanding client. The whorish response from the Herald is surprising? Hardly. Like Cato's letters, the papers will continue to be printed and distributed, even if we have to return to the Gutenberg press and we must enlist fair-minded people across Illinois who want the truth, not Pritzker's truth, to hand-deliver them door-to-door. The truth of Lord Pritzker's reign will be told. And the people that are responsible for telling it, mainly people like Dick Uihlein, who's provided so much in terms of resources to ensure that Illinois families hear the full story of what's happening, get all the details, warts and all.
Yep.
And Timponi with the papers and a lot of other people that are foot soldiers who don't get skewered by the press. So the people that have appeared in my ads and get nothing but flack for it. And this is the response from the shot callers in this state. And I want to pay particular attention, you to pay particular attention to the whorish response phrase that I use, because I use that purposely. Here's the Chicago Press Corps and your political Democrat, political ruling class. They're Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, except they don't cover the fact that they're a prostitute with beauty. They cover it with ugliness and moral indignation, however misplaced. So they don't want you to know that they're whores. But they are. And I've mentioned the same thing with the fights I've been in to get television ads aired on these broadcast networks. We're going to air it. We're not going to air it. We aired it, but now we're not going to air it anymore. There's no standard there. There's no standards with these people.
It's all about fear.
It's all about fear. It's all about pressure. It's all about whose interests are being served.
Well, it's all about access to politicians, because if they don't do what he says, they're not going to get that one-on-one. And then the news director is going to come down and say, why is this such and such from Channel 7 have the one-on-one and you don't? That's why they do what they do, because they want to keep their jobs.
Bob and Grave Lake.
Been there.
Yeah, I suggest as conservatives we show Jelly Belly a little compassion. He has a very, very large head and a very ample rear end. It's going to take him a long time to pull it out.
Thanks for the call, Bob.
And an ancillary issue. Has anybody seen any yard signs for Pritzker or bumper stickers for him anywhere? Because I haven't. And I live in the city, and I drive all around the city, whether it's with this job or another job. I don't see anything. And when I do find one, I'll tweet it, but I haven't seen anything. There's no love for him. And people that are supporting him do so while they're driving. They're like, well, you know, it's women's rights. I guess I'm going to have to vote for him. Like, no, you don't have to vote for him. Abortion is not going to go away if Darren Bailey is elected. And I tell people that.
That's a sliver of your...
I know,
circle light, in Lakeview. I get it. There are a lot of other issues, but,
right.
But yeah, that's fine.
I mean, about the other issues.
Yeah, but that is an example of the indolence that's out there. It's difficult. It's difficult to penetrate the minds that have been all twisted up for so many years, and the fatalism that exists among people who actually do know better, but have just sort of given up. Well, that's what they're counting on. That's what they're counting on. That's why Pritzker thinks he can get away with behaving as he does, whether it's with respect to governance, with respect to what is legitimate and who is legitimate, who can have their say in public spaces.
You can't.
All roads lead through Pritzker. That's how he's set up his government. And by the way, that's what he thinks it is, his government. It's his government and his media, and everybody better fold in.
And don't forget, during COVID, people want to know that their leaders are suffering through the same hardships that they are. And he absolutely did the complete opposite. Got his family out to Florida so they could live their lives while we suffered and our children suffered for almost 2 years.
Matt, Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. Dan, I just want to tell you, your publication's fantastic, and I share it with my friends and family and people who would otherwise have not perhaps paid attention to what's really going on. Read that, and their eyes are wide open. It's a great thing to see, and you can't deny it. So it's really helping to educate people, and that's another reason they don't want it published.
Thanks
it works, and it's effective, so keep it up.
Thanks for the comment. We will. We absolutely will.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, John in Willowbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Amy wanted to know where all the signs are for JV. I drive for Uber, and they're all in the black neighborhoods. And with Pritzker, his platform is strictly is, you tell us the women, vote for me, I promise you can kill your babies. That to me is sickening. That's all his platform is. I thank you, guys.
Thanks for the call, John. Certainly that's the focus of his commercials, isn't it? Yeah. Craig, Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey, good morning. And Amy, thanks for taking my call. Well, hey, this jello belly in that, he's like a typical leftist in that you shine any kind of light of truth on him or any other leftist like that, they absolutely can't take it. They basically, they panic and basically flail, and they expect every single person around them in their circle to stick with them and fall on the sword for them. And that they are sick people.
Thanks for the call, Craig. And here's the thing, too. I mean, let's not lose sight of it. I'm not participating in a debate. That's not for you. It's for
the people.
Exactly.
God, he's so selfish and stupid.
It's about him. So I guess you have to decide if your existence in Illinois is also about J.B. Pritzker or it's about you and your interests. That's on the ballot November 8th.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
When do we get those emergency centers for the 500 migrants that have been bussed up from Texas? Like New York is setting up. Hey, are we going to make them a cornered place? A migrant emergency center?
I asked that last time at the press conference because Pritzker, you know, the whole Democratic family was there. Mom, dad, aunt, grandma, Preckwinkle. And they said, no, not at this time. That's not on the plan. They don't plan to do it. But, you know, we have the marathon coming up. So we got to make everything look as pristine and as normal as possible for the runners who are coming from all over the world.
You've got all these empty Chicago public schools. I've suggested before they could use the public schools.
Half of McCormick Place is empty.
Jelly Belly has scrambled the National Guard.
Well, I talked to a National Guardsman yesterday, and he said, no, we haven't. To the best of his knowledge, yes, we administered vaccine shots, and we heard about the 75 members, but so far we haven't gotten any orders.
We may not have orders, but he's activated them.
Okay.
For 0.01% of the migrants arriving across the border in border communities on a daily basis.
Okay.
I mean, really, it's just hysterical to watch. And speaking of the schools, you know, the migrants being housed in empty schools if they need shelter, or if the Pritzker family won't make the Hyatt hotels available. I don't know why. I don't know why they wouldn't. Live their values and everything.
Shared values.
That's right. Chicago values.
We're all in Illinois, Dan.
Yeah.
Just don't you dare forget it.
Children of the migrants who arrived at Chicago's Union Station 2 weeks ago are now enrolled at Countryside's Ideal Elementary School, according to sources who told the West Cook News, one of those papers.
That's not a real paper, according to Marian Ahern.
Yeah.
Not a real paper. Just made this declarative statement.
Yeah, so, I mean,
it's only been around for 8 years.
I mean, Ideal Elementary School is a real school.
Okay.
And the people that were talked to are real parents at the school.
Oh, okay.
But okay. I mean, I'm a little leery of reading this story because I'm afraid Jelly Belly may duck out of another gubernatorial debate if he hears it. Venezuelan children, part of a group of 75 migrants living at the Burr Ridge Hampton Inn after Lightfoot shipped them out to Burr Ridge and Elk Grove Village. Huge challenge and distraction. We're more than a month into the semester. This is coming from within the schools. This is a part of the LaGrange Countryside School District 105. The school has 253 students, K through 6, 64% Latino, 21% white, 8% black. So the question, too, I mean, in terms of the point that I've made repeatedly and now will make again, this is what Pritzker and Lightfoot and Chicago politicians do. It's what they've always done. The problems they impose on the city, they seek to extend to the suburbs so that it is not Chicago versus the suburbs. Chicago values, in quotation marks,
spread throughout the suburb.
Correct. The region. Because if you control 60% of the state's population, that would be Cook and the Collars, then you have control of the state, which is what they've done and how they have it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. By the way, have you seen some of these memes going around, just as a sort of a humorous aside?
No.
I like the one. Word of the day is DeSantis. DeSantis.
Okay.
Yeah. We wanted to go to Martha's Vineyard, but they dissent. Wait, no, wait. No, now I messed it up. No, I messed it up. God. I'm going from memory, and I'm an aged individual. More of the day says, we tried to go to Martha's Vineyard, but DeSantis away. It's not bad, even though I maimed it. Yeah, so it's not bad.
That is good.
Here's an interesting little development.
Okay.
Jared Kushner.
Kush?
Yeah. I mean, he's the opposite of Kush from Jerry Maguire.
I know
you like the nickname. But he's the one with the, he talks like Emo Phillips.
Yes, he does.
Listen to what he said about DeSantis, word of the day, on Fox yesterday.
We have to remember these are human beings, they're people, so seeing them being used as political pawns one way or the other is very troubling to me.
Is it one way or the other? Are they being used as political pawns one way or the other? Is what Joe Biden did and what his administration has been doing, is that the same as what DeSantis and Abbott did?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can always also reach us on our text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Is that the same? I don't think so. I don't think so. The Biden administration not abiding its constitutional responsibility to provide for national security, which necessarily includes border security, and then imposing unfunded mandates on border communities. also not abiding their responsibility to provide for personal safety. Because how many stories do we have to tell you? How many angel moms and dads do you have to hear from? People in this country who shouldn't be in this country illegally, repeatedly, committing crimes, hurting other people, killing other people. This has happened thousands and thousands and thousands of times. So is that the same thing as DeSantis and Abbott saying, anybody want to go to Chicago? Anybody want to go to Martha's Vineyard? Anybody want to go to Biden's vacation home or Kamala's D.C. metro compound? And so we'll bus you there. You got family up in Chicago? Okay, well, you know, whoever, right. Raise your hand, sign the waiver. Here's your, you know, the stuff that you need to have a safe trip up to Chicago. And then, you know, you'll have a mayor that of a sanctuary city in a sanctuary state. He'll ship you out to a nice suburban community where your kids can go to school on somebody else's dime.
And I have to tell you, Jason Navarette from NBC5, I know he used to be a reporter in El Paso. Everybody all worked at the same station in El Paso because I worked at the same place. So he's been down there all week. And I don't know if they were trying to make DeSantis and Abbott look bad, but they actually ended up making them look good. Listen to this. Is a Democrat. His name's Mario D'Agostino. He's deputy chief manager in El Paso for Border Patrol and helps ship these people out, saying we've let people know in cities all along who's coming, and we give them the manifest.
We talk to the NGOs in New York to make sure they understand. They get that same document, that same manifest, the same time, estimated time of arrival. And this is so they can prepare their resources, because we understand, as you look around here, we do understand how it is to receive people.
They know. So they're working with cities. So when Pritzker gets up there, like, and then all of a sudden a bus pops up, it's not true. And if you just look at the video that they're showing, there's a big sign that says Chicago with an arrow. Get on this bus. New York, get on this bus. D.C., get on this bus. So they know where they're going, and the families that they talk to have family in Chicago or in surrounding cities or surrounding states. That's why they choose to go to Chicago. Nobody is being forced for anything, and they're so happy to be here, to finally make it onto, you know, into America.
Where do people
– I
don't – where is this – you know, what's your sense of where people are treated more humanely? Is it where people are voluntarily deciding to live, or is it where people are fleeing? You know, I mean, just the logic of this. First of all, as DeSantis said this week, you've declared yourself a sanctuary city. You've said, send them to us, so we're sending them to you. You've said, we're not going to participate in federal law enforcement. We're not going to help federal law enforcement. We just get to abide the laws we want, and we don't have to abide the laws we don't want to. And that's how we're going to do it. Send them to us. So they send them to us. That's the same thing as what the Biden administration is doing. I don't want to let Kushner off the hook here. I know he's probably flacking for Trump and trying to pinprick DeSantis a little bit, I guess. But that's the sort of mealy-mouthed nonsense that, frankly, from Kushner, probably negatively impacted the Trump administration's performance and has negatively impacted the Republican Party's performance for a long time. No. And the indication that some place is more humane than another place, is it people going or people fleeing? So Texas, people are going to. Florida, people are going to. Of all races, of all stripes, and point of fact, what's actually happening, people talk about, oh, you know, the conservatives fleeing these blue states and the wealthy and all the wealth that's being redeployed to freer states. We had the great migration of blacks from the South to the North. That's being reversed. That's being reversed. And it's been going on for a while. I mean, remember, between 2010 and 2020, Chicago lost 200,000 black residents.
200,000.
You think they don't want you to think through this. They don't want you to see what's actually happening. You're not to believe the data or your lying eyes. You're supposed to just, you know, use your ears and regurgitate what they tell you. That's it. Don't process anything. But it's so humane. These are such humane places. That's why people are fleeing them like they are on fire. California, Illinois, New York. Right. That makes sense? Susie, Northside.
Good morning. Thank you for what you do. Two things, Dan and Amy. When old bag of oatmeal Biden was running, he said there will be no suburbs. And the second thing I read in when I read 1984, George Orwell, he said there was a sign that said, don't believe what you see or hear. Believe what the party tells you.
Yeah, right.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Susie.
I don't remember Biden saying he wanted to get rid of the suburbs.
Because there is a riff on that she's pointing to. And the Orwell riff that she referenced, I mean, that's a seminal quote. The party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command. Yeah. Right. John Naperville.
You know, I'm very disappointed in you and Amy, Dan, because you guys are falling for the bait and looking at these little things and missing the big picture.
Oh, really?
Why are these people being led in to begin with? That's the original sin, and nobody's harping on that. Well, oh, it shouldn't have gone here. It shouldn't have gone here.
No. That's not true. We've talked many times, including in the last 2 weeks of this context, about, they don't have a solution. Actually, we do. It's called Remain in Mexico, pending your asylum application. Yeah, we have mentioned that.
Okay.
Many times.
And I apologize. But the
narrative that we're hearing, though, in the media is, oh, they should have gone here or there instead of they shouldn't have been here in the beginning. And
yeah.
That's disgusting.
I agree. Thanks for the call. And the other part of this, on behalf of the migrants, what we've said is the idea that you have to wait 2 years for a hearing on your asylum application. Well, that's ridiculous. We have the resources. We have the judges. Make the necessary arrangements to process these applications quickly so we can separate the legitimate asylum seekers from the illegitimate asylum seekers because, of course, and we'll talk to Brian Stile about this, Congressman from Kenosha at 6:30, but we know this. You heard Marco Rubio talking about it the other day. The people are trained. They know what to say. They pay to get across the border.
Yeah.
So they're coached up. Yeah, declare you're an asylum seeker and so on and so forth. And, economic refugees or economic migrants, I'm sorry, are not legitimate asylum seekers. I want a better life, so I seek asylum. No, that's not the standard.
Well, that's what's happening. Here's Alejandra, who was interviewed yesterday via channel NBC5.
We feel like we've made it. We've accomplished our objective. We had a hard test. Hard weeks. It's been a hard month, but there was a lot of people that helped us along the way.
Yep.
We're happy to be here, and we're happy to start our American dream.
So that's why they know they can walk in. So they that family, Alejandro, has four kids. They hired a coyote, paid tens of thousands of dollars to be trained to know what to say when they get here, and now, boom, they won the lottery.
They didn't win the lottery.
Wow.
I appreciate. He wants a better life for himself and his family. I get that. So do billions of people the world over. So we should have no process for that? Come one, come all on your terms. Is that how we should do immigration? David in Winnetka.
Yeah. So I understand DeSantis's point and what he was, doing in the crux of it. But I was hoping you guys could help me win a bet here or whatever. So my girlfriend and I, we both lean right. She's explaining the whole humanity of it, that people, having to be used as pawns in a sense of like, I side with DeSantis. She's trying to, help me see it in a different.
I don't even know what that means. People being used as pawns.
So if
El Paso has to deal with them instead of Chicago, they're not being used as pawns then?
And that's my point to the whole thing. And she's trying to say, from a humane level, just that it's even taking place. But here's one interesting thing.
Just hold on a second. A humane level. Yeah. They're at the Hampton Inn in Burr Ridge. Their kids are going to a suburban school in Chicagoland. I mean, they act like people. They keep saying humanity and humane level like they're being put into internment camps. I mean,
they're being bused on air conditioned charter buses with bathrooms and movies and food.
Flown to Martha's Vineyard. I mean, it's ridiculous, this humanity thing.
Agreed. And one more quickie. So while we're speaking of this, I just realized you mentioned that they're paying tens of thousands of dollars to get in. Can you imagine if it was Americans going the other way? We probably wouldn't have the tens of thousands of dollars to get there.
Thanks for the call, David.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka, today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Here's a positively Chicago story in 2022. Take a listen.
I mean, who gets their car stolen two times in 3 hours?
First, a brazen daylight car theft right from the auto shop. Simon says it happened Monday when he took his 2017 Jaguar SUV for an oil change. A dark four-door vehicle drives up, two people in masks exit, enter the bay where Simon's car has its hood up, close it up, hop in, and take off.
Masked individuals came in, just took the car and hijacked it.
Simon called police. They were there in minutes and showed them the GPS tracker on the car.
We found it on the west side of Chicago.
His Jag went from Bucktown to the 2600 block of Madison, East Garfield Park. CPD escorted him to his vehicle. Simon got his car back and took it to his local gas station to fill up. Then,
got out of my car, filled up with gas, and in hopped another individual that stole my car and drove off.
Yes, Simon says within a three-hour span, his car was stolen twice. He left it running while filling up.
Gone in 60 seconds or less. The nozzle was in the tank, and gas was flying everywhere.
This time, the car went from the 2300 block of West Fullerton in Bucktown to Douglas Park.
Recontacted the two officers that helped me previously and said, "You're never going to believe this, but my car was stolen again." Oh,
Chicago police were able to recover his car again. Simon says by that time there were already stolen plates on it and that he's grateful for the quick work of police.
Just a life lesson that we all need to be really careful of our surroundings and just be smart and diligent.
As for his friends and family,
they're telling me to buy some lottery tickets at this point. Luck is on my side and, just hopefully it'll be good luck this time.
It could have been worse. He could have been the woman back in January that was carjacked twice in 3 days.
Oh, I remember that. We talked about that. Sorry.
Yeah, so the odds aren't as long as you think for something like that to happen. It's almost like a valet service.
No. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'll take that. Yeah.
Simon says, poor Corey Simon.
I'll take that, and then the police will return it when we're done using it for whatever. To whatever nefarious ends we desire, but I love the fact they like his car. With Jag SUV, sure. And I like the fact that the second thief, they already had the stolen plates on it.
Right.
I mean, this is ready to go. I mean, it's efficient. You know, some of these operations are pretty efficient. If you could get these guys to do something more productive, they could probably be very successful in the legitimate world. But. Alas, just a perfectly Chicago story. We need to be aware of our surroundings. He almost went to hey, this is just what happens
in
a big city.
Right. We gotta deal with it.
It's just city living.
Well, I do. I mean, before you pump up, don't you look pump up? I mean, fill up your tank with gas. Don't
like
you
Hans and Franz.
Look right at the pump. Are you up? Don't you look around to make sure? I do now. I do one of these like the Cagney Lacey, the Farrah Fawcett. I'm looking around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can pump up now.
Are you?
And I don't turn my back. When I started pumping, I'm like this, like a hawk.
Uh huh. Right, ready to pounce. Do you do the you do your Charlie's Angels with the? Do you actually have a weapon, or do you just use your finger gun? Because I don't think the finger gun is as intimidating as you think it is. Plus, the video of the first time his car got stolen was great because these guys just pull in. You heard him describe it, but see the video. They pull in. He's getting his car serviced. They just walk into the bay. They get in. They pull out. They leave.
It's got to be an inside job. They have to know somebody that works at that Jiffy Lube place or where. Now, I didn't mean to say Jiffy Lube. I don't know what.
Yeah, whatever repair shop it was. But or they're just casing that joint and looking for when cars are unattended.
That they want.
Yeah.
with the keys in the ignition. Just, you know.
Yeah. Summer.
There's Otter Tracker on his car, so that's how they're able to find everything.
Hey, pal, how's your summer of joy going? For more on crime locally, domestically, as well as at the border, so internationally, particularly when, as was mentioned by Hemmer on Fox yesterday, right, or the day before, five times as many persons detained at the border trying to enter illegally who were on the terrorist watch list this year than the previous 5 years. Yeah. Brian Stile is congressman just north of the Cheddar Curtain in Kenosha. He joins us now. Brian, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, you've got a domestic personal safety problem in one of your big cities, too, your biggest city, Milwaukee. So you are familiar, perhaps on a slightly smaller scale, with what we're talking about in Chicago.
Absolutely. Crime has run rampant as we've allowed the left of the past handful of years to drive the narrative of anti-police rhetoric. And I think this election this fall is our chance to finally be able to stand up to the radical left and say enough's enough. We need to have communities that are safe. We need to stand with the men and women of law enforcement. And some of this also is a national security issue, as you were referencing earlier. More people coming across are on the terror watch list, illegally entering the United States. And in addition to that, we have fentanyl pouring across the border from Mexico into the United States that killed over 100,000 Americans last year. We need to get this under control. We need to stand with the men and women of law enforcement. We got to protect our communities.
But how do we do that? I mean, especially let's talk begin with fentanyl, because there's a lot of, we call them fentanyl funerals now that people are going to. How is this being transported into America?
This is often being designed and developed in China. The raw materials are then being brought into Mexico. In Mexico, they're producing the fentanyl into the final product and then illegally trafficking it across the border. And one of the biggest problems is our Border Patrol agents are overworked and understaffed, and we don't have a wall, a physical barrier along key sections of the border. And so all of that together is allowing this drug that's incredibly deadly to come into the United States. It gets laced into other drugs like marijuana or heroin. People don't realize they're taking it, and over 100,000 Americans died as a result of these international criminal gangs. Securing our border is step number one in preventing this illegal drug from entering the United States.
Hey, what's going on up in Wisconsin, similar to Chicago? Because you've got a big leftist, somebody that likes to side with criminals as opposed to victims in the governor's office there in Evers, like we do here. Any push for no cash bail and changing the rules of engagement for police to put them in a completely reactive, if not prone, position?
Well, we got a great opportunity to defeat Democratic Governor Tony Evers this fall with Republican Tim Michaels. And hopefully we can do just that. We had Kamala Harris fly in to Milwaukee yesterday to speak to the Democratic Attorney General's Association. What could be worse? Soft on crime politicians talking to far too many soft on crime prosecutors. And we have to win attorney general races where we can actually hold criminals accountable. We see problems in the state of Wisconsin where we have liberal district attorneys not holding criminals accountable, turning the courthouse into a revolving door. And again, between our attorney general's race and our governor's race in the state of Wisconsin, we can pick those up. We can really turn a corner on actually enforcing the rule of law in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I got a rule of law issue for you that's really a federal issue, although, you know, the lines here are blurred, and they should be, because federal should be supporting local and vice versa. Joliet Police and federal authorities arrested 15 people for filing fraudulent Paycheck Protection Program loan applications while in custody in the Will County Jail, suburban Chicago, as I'm sure you know. They were in custody on felony gun or drug charges. Some people use jail phones to complete the PPP loan process. Some spend PPP money to bond out of jail, which I don't think was a legitimate use of PPP money.
Are you serious?
Yeah. This was Operation Triple P. This is Joliet Police and federal authorities. And we've done some look-see at the amount of PPP loans that were distributed sort of neighborhood by neighborhood, community by community. And the numbers are staggering. A lot of the amounts are under $25,000. So, you know, too minuscule probably for the Department of Justice to pay much attention to. But, you know, if you give out thousands and thousands of $25,000 loans, pretty soon it adds up to real money. I just wonder about, as we're still making assessments of all the consequences of our response to COVID, if this isn't something that Republicans should be taking up on the Hill as well.
We got two problems playing out at the same time. We got a federal government that is turned into a machine of pumping out money into the American public, causing inflation, but also setting ourselves up for this type of fraud. And then two, under one-party Democratic control, Congress has done a horrific job of actually conducting rigorous oversight to rein in this type of abuse. And so I believe when Republicans retake the gavel this fall under Speaker Kevin McCarthy, we can conduct the oversight that's needed in the House of Representatives to dig into these programs and actually hold people accountable who failed to put in the controls that were necessary to prevent this type of fraud, this type of abuse, and this type of waste of government taxpayer dollars from ever occurring.
So talk to us a little bit about this rollout of the Commitment to America. Are we doing a Contract with America redux here in the closing weeks?
Yeah, I'm in just outside of Pittsburgh today with Kevin McCarthy and some of the leaders of the Republican Party. We're going to be rolling out the Commitment to America here in the next hour, talking about what does the Republican Party stand for? Not just what are we against. We're against what the Democrats are doing, but what are we going to do if given the ability to govern in Washington, D.C.? And we're going to fight for an economy that's strong, reining in inflation, lowering prices, a nation that's safe. We talked about that with securing the border and making sure we stand with the men and women of law enforcement, building a future built on freedom so that students and parents have a voice in their schools and we can fight back against big tech, and then having a government that's accountable, which is just what we talked about, preventing this waste, fraud, and abuse that is far too rampant in our federal government, a government that's been unchecked under one-party Democratic control. I think it's essential that we put forward a platform for the American people to see that'll stand in stark contrast to what would occur under another 2 years of Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden.
Well, on the inflation piece, you know, part of the problem and part of the suspicion among many is that, you know, Republicans culpability here, too. We've got a lot of big spending Republicans that are all for printing funny money and distributing it and ever expanding the welfare state, maybe a little bit slower than the Democrats, but expanding it nonetheless. So, you know, why should we believe you guys? What specifically do you intend to do?
Well, I think it's all the more important that we have every Republican that's running that stands up and says that they're going to fight for this so we and all voters can hold them accountable if they break from conservative orthodoxy. But in particular, we got to rein in the reckless spending. Two, we need to unleash American energy. We've seen an energy war by this administration, starting with the canceling of the Keystone Pipeline, refusal to allow drilling in new wells for oil and natural gas in places like the Gulf of Mexico and Alaska. And we need to really address our labor situation where far too many people remain on the sidelines. If we did those three things, we could have a significant and real impact on lowering inflation in the United States of America. People can't afford the things that their family needs, and we owe it to the American people to be able to stand up and turn a corner to get our country back on track.
He is Representative Brian Steil, congressman from just north of the Cheddar Curtain there in Kenosha, Wisconsin's first. Brian, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Have you seen the Elvis movie yet, where Tom Hanks plays Colonel Parker?
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it?
My mom saw it. My sister saw it because they have been to Graceland. They love them some Elvis.
It's very good. And Austin
Did
Butler.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, it's very good. Austin Butler. Tom Hanks was good as Colonel Tom Parker. And Austin Butler, you may not immediately recognize him. He was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's film. Does a great job, but it's a great story, and it.
I heard it's a very long movie, though.
Yeah. Okay. It's a big story to
it's
tell.
A big story.
You know, the greatest selling artist of all time. Big story to tell.
Okay. Yeah. Fine.
I was thinking about it when I heard we were going to get our next guest because of. Elvis was inspired by the blues. I mean, that's the sort of foundation of his music and the relationship he had with legends like B.B. King and his exposure to Little Richard in the beginning. So it's just such a cool story because it's such an interesting intersection of music and culture. And our next guest is part of that intersection between music and culture. He's a legendary blues pianist in his own right, and name a blues legend, and he has played with them. He's Daryl Davis. He's also a race relations expert, author, and documentarian. And he's part of an organization called FAIR, the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. They're on a pro-human tour they're launching, and they're coming to our FAIR community, Chicagoland, October 18th in Evanston. Evanston could use a little bit of pushback against racism and intolerance from the left. October 18th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Double Clutch Brewery, 2121 Ashland. Daryl Davis will be there, as will our friend Jason Hill from DePaul and others. We've got some great people involved with this organization and this tour. We're pleased to be joined now by legendary blues pianist Daryl Davis. Daryl, thanks so much for being with us. Such an honor.
Thank you, Dan and Amy. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
So, you're talk a little bit about music, but one of the things that you did that was just seminal and fascinating, I think people would be interested to hear if they're not already familiar with it, is the work that you did to take white supremacists out of the white supremacist movement, or these organizations have essentially members of the KKK turn in their robes. Tell us that story.
Sure, be glad to. Well, really, I didn't take them out. I gave them reason to take themselves out.
Yeah, right.
And, I'm a firm believer that a missed opportunity for dialogue is a missed opportunity for conflict resolution. So I would sit down with people in the white supremacist movement, whether they're KKK members or neo-Nazis or whoever, and have these conversations. And most times it doesn't happen overnight. It can, and it has, but the majority of times it happens incrementally over time. And I give them reason to rethink that ideology. And when they rethink it on their own, oftentimes it's to the conclusion, I've been wrong, I need to get out of this. And that's how I end up with their robes and hoods and swastika flags and whatever else.
So how does that even start? I mean, it's like you call the KKK chapter and you say, hey, I'm Daryl Davis. I'm a blues musician. I'd like to come to talk to you about race relations.
Well, no, actually, I can do that now. But I continue that work now. But initially, they didn't know that I was black. I would have my white secretary, and I only mention her race only because I could care less about somebody's race, but because if I called, they might pick up in my voice that I'm black. No, I'm not going to talk to you. I'd hang up the phone. But I would have her call and tell them that she works for her boss who's writing a book on the Klan. Would they consent to sitting down and providing an interview? And I instructed her not to tell them that I was black unless they asked. So that's how it worked initially. But now everybody, of course, in the movement, when they hear the name Daryl Davis, they have a vision of me. So they know I'm black. But that's how it started initially. And in some cases, they would invite me to their home, and they'd freak out when I knock on the door. Some would not talk to me. Some would come out on the porch and talk. Others, would hesitantly invite me in. And so that's how it started. I've seen the whole run of every scenario.
Well, how many people have you helped?
Indirectly, over 200 have left these movements. I would say directly, maybe between 60 and 70.
That's outstanding.
When one person changes,
it's amazing.
I'm sorry.
It's amazing. It's outstanding, and it seems like it sort of builds upon itself too, right? Once it's sort of like first money in an enterprise. Once you figure out how to get people to walk away from sort of the ignorance that has beset them, you know, it builds upon itself. It gets easier, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. But also, you know, people who join these kinds of organizations, regardless of what color they are, whatever organization, you know, are basically followers. And so when the leader quits, then the followers quit. Mm. Or if a member quits, then usually his buddies who came in because he came in, or his family, you know, came in because their daddy was in or something like that, they drop out. That's what I'm talking about, indirect.
Right. Well, what do you tell them? What's your, I mean, it sounds weird, but what's your sales pitch? What's your closing argument to them?
Well, you know, it depends upon the individual. Actually, I'm not there to convert them. Even though the media says, you know, black musician converts X number of KKK people or white supremacists, no, I did not convert anybody. I am the impetus for over 200 to convert themselves. All I set out to do was ask a question, which was, how can you hate me when you don't even know me? And then I sit back and I listen to these people. And one thing I've learned, I've performed as a musician, you mentioned that earlier, in all 50 states. I've been to 61 countries. And so I've been exposed to a ton of skin colors, ethnicities, cultures, beliefs, ideologies, et cetera. And all of that has, you know, shaped who I've become. But one thing I can tell you that we all have in common, no matter where on the planet you may be, are these five core values. Everyone wants to be loved. Everyone wants to be respected. We all want to be heard. We all want to be treated truthfully and fairly. And we all want the same things for our family as anybody else wants for their family. And if we can learn to apply those five core values, or any of those five values, when we find ourselves in an adversarial situation or in a society or culture in which we are unfamiliar or uncomfortable, I can guarantee you that our navigation of that situation, culture or society, will be much more smooth and much more positive. And so I present it like that, and then I sit back and I listen. And because I've spent time listening to these people, and I have studied their side, you know, their position, so already they have respect for somebody who comes in knowing about their position.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're more inclined to listen to me. And I don't tell them what to believe or what not to believe. I simply give them things to think about. And when they think about them in those terms, then over time they come, it's trouble. It's like, whoa, you know, what this guy was saying was true. How come I didn't know this before? But now, do I disbelieve it just because he's black? Or do I accept it as truth because I know it's the truth and disregard his skin color? So they have that cognitive dissonance going on, and they struggle with that. And then in time they decide, hey, you know what? I need to change my ideology and follow this path of truth. Now, there will always be those who will go to their grave believing a lie and being violent, hateful, and racist, you know, on all sides. But those, you know, those people, even some of them have come back to me and have changed their mind. Not all will. There'll be some who will die, you know, with that ideology. But those who struggle with it, usually they will go in the path of the truth.
And the
higher they are up in rank, the harder it is for them to give it up. Because as you rise through the ranks of the movement, you have more and more followers under you. So how do you go to your followers, say 200 people, you know, are in your clan, you know, and you're the Grand Dragon or Imperial Wizard. How do you go and tell those people, hey, I was wrong? That's very hard to do, A, to admit that you're wrong, and B, to give up that kind of power.
You said on all sides, hatefulness will exist on all sides. What do you mean? What do you mean all sides? It's, as I understand it, it's just white conservatives that are the problem.
What planet are you on?
Well, I mean, this is what I get from, you know, the media that I consume.
See, that's the media that you consume. You need to consume more media.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
More various media. But no, all sides, black, white, conservative, liberal, you know, this religion, that religion, all sides. All sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all, you know, racism, supremacy of anything is wrong on all sides.
So
now,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to segue, because I think it's a perfect segue to now this work you're doing with the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, you know, applying your skills as a facilitator towards enlightenment. So what's the challenge now? What's that you're undertaking as part of this organization?
Well, this is a new organization, and it's still growing, and it has grown exponentially, you know, all over the country. The founder of the organization, Brian Bartning, has really put together a phenomenal team of people, a board of advisors, people, senior fellows, et cetera, in quite a number of states. I think the last time I saw, and I know it's grown since then, we had 156 chapters spread out across the country. We are addressing all kinds of issues on racism, on intolerance throughout the country. And in fact, we're coming to Evanston right there, you know, Illinois. I'm from Chicago originally, so I get to come to my home state. But we'll be in Evanston on October 18th at the Double Clutch Brewery. I believe it's from 6:30 to 9:30.
Right.
And people have a chance to come out and hear some of our speakers, hear some of the issues, you know, that are in our country today and how we can address those issues.
You know, Evanston.
And in Fair, we have a wide variety of people on the board, you know, who may not even agree with each other, but we are committed to working together to solve the problem and reach the end goal. And that's what, you know, we need a lot more of in our country, especially in our Congress right now.
Evanston's one of the towns that they're paying people reparations, and I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
I don't know a whole lot about that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Housing allowances.
When you say reparations, of course I know the definition of the word, but specifically what are you talking about?
People apply to get
$25,000 housing grant as a way to make amends for past wrongs is what they would argue.
Yes. Right.
So now are you talking about past wrongs in terms of slavery? Or
yes.
Are you talking about
yes.
Some other injustice?
No, slavery. If you can prove they are a descendant of a slave and people apply that application process and they can do with this money what they want, they can pay off their mortgage, they can use it for housing repairs. There's different things they can use.
Slavery or past instances of discrimination.
Okay.
It's not just a descendant of slave, but anyway, you get the gist.
Okay, because, you know, I'm a descendant of slaves. Mm-hmm. We were promised, we, meaning black people, were promised at the end of slavery, 40 acres and a mule, and I will guarantee you, you cannot find me one family that ever got that. We have given reparations to Native Americans. We have given reparations to Japanese Americans. We put in internment camps and their families, but nothing has been done about slavery. Now, in terms of reparations, I don't necessarily think that that money is always the answer. I believe it may perhaps in giving people tuition to go to school, to advance, you know, their education, things like that. Certainly reparations in one form or another are needed, but they should be used for the benefit of those people receiving those reparations, not to be used, you know, to go to do anything they want to do with, is my feeling. Also, how many generations back, you know, do you want to go? For example, if my great-great-grandfather was a freed slave, but, you know, say my grandchildren, would they be entitled to reparations? I mean, I don't have any, you know, biological grandchildren, but if I did, would they be entitled to reparations? I would say probably not, because, you know, they are far removed from that era. So we need to determine, how far back do we want to go in terms of who receives those reparations? Should it be received in terms of money? Should it be received in terms of providing a free tuition for an education for people? Things like that. Yeah. For example, Prince Edward County, Virginia, when desegregation was passed by the Supreme Court, the county of Prince Edward, Virginia, closed all public schools, not for 5 days, not for 5 weeks, not for 5 months, but for 5 years. 5 years, okay? If you go down to Prince Edward County, which I have many times, to lecture or whatever, perform, I'm 64. People my age, even a little younger or older, many of them who were residents of Prince Edward County, who are still there, are basically functionally illiterate. Their reading and writing and mathematical skills have been damaged by missing 5 years of school. Think about maybe your kids, or if you have, you know, little kids, or if you don't, maybe grandkids. Think about they're missing 2 years of school during the pandemic and having to go to Zoom school. Some, you know, some did okay, some struggled with learning over Zoom. There's no socialization, no individual one-on-one with the teacher, et cetera. Think about that. 2 years of missing school, now compared to 5 years of missing school. Should those people get reparations? Absolutely. Absolutely. Should it come in the form of money, or should it come in the form of tuition? Well, you know, that can be determined, but they definitely deserve reparation.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation about injured parties. Coleman Hughes has argued before Congress for, you know, victims of Jim Crow laws that actually have, you know, standing as people that are alive today and suffered that injustice at the hands of the government, and there should be recompense for that. I think that's pretty persuasive. I think when you start getting generations removed, it gets a little bit more complicated where you draw lines,
right,
and so forth. But it's an interesting conversation.
I would agree with Coleman Hughes, and Coleman is a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. I wanted to get your reaction to something else, too.
The Elvis movie?
I'm sorry? Oh, the Elvis movie? Yeah.
The Elvis movie? I heard you and Amy talking about it.
If you want to comment on it, what'd you think? I thought it was pretty good.
Okay. I thought the acting was excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent acting on everybody's part. It was missing some things. You know, the
okay.
movie was more about Colonel Parker, of course.
Yeah, right.
Than
Hanks.
Elvis.
Right.
Yeah, Tom Hanks. I thought it was very well done, but it missed a lot of things. You know, I am a huge, huge Elvis fan. I saw Elvis 14 times. I met him twice, and I went to his funeral.
Okay.
I love Elvis Presley, but the story was incomplete when it came to Colonel Parker. There were a number of things that should have been in the movie that were not. But overall, it was a good movie, but it was missing things.
All right. Well, wait a second. You know, you can't tease us like that. You got personal knowledge. So to give us an example of what was missing about Parker.
Okay. Well, do you know the song? Do you know the name Otis Blackwell?
No.
Otis Blackwell was one of the greatest American pop and rock and roll songwriters.
Okay.
He wrote Elvis's biggest hit, which was Don't Be Cruel.
Okay.
He also wrote All Shook Up, Return to Sender, Paralyzed. He wrote Great Balls of Fire for Jerry Lee Lewis. He wrote the song Fever. Anyway, Otis Blackwell was one of Elvis's favorite people. And Elvis Presley never wrote a song in his life. Colonel Parker owned 50% of Elvis Presley. That's unheard of for a manager.
Wow.
Agents get between 10 and 20%.
Yeah.
Managers get between 20 and 35%. Colonel Parker was taking 50% of Elvis. And he told Otis Blackwell, now Elvis, you know, Elvis never wrote any songs.
Right.
Songs were written for him. Many of them written by Lieber and Stoller, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, who were the Lennon and McCartney of the 50s. Anyway, when they were paid their royalties, they got 100% of what they were owed in royalties. They did not share any writing credit with Elvis. These two guys were white. Otis Blackwell was a black singer-songwriter. And Colonel Parker made him give Elvis 50% of any song that Elvis recorded that Otis wrote, because then Colonel Parker would get 50% of Elvis. You understand?
Yeah,
so
right.
If you look at those songs, Don't Be Cruel, All Shook Up, Return to Sender, you will see the credit says Blackwell/Presley. And Presley never wrote a song. This was not Elvis's doing. This was Colonel Parker's doing.
Oh, interesting. Well, I mean, I wish I would have been included, but I mean, certainly you would agree Colonel Parker doesn't exactly come off well in that movie. I mean, he's not a sympathetic figure at all. He's terrible.
Colonel Parker in real life was a murderer, and that's why Elvis could never tour outside of the country.
Right, he didn't have a pet.
Everywhere that Elvis went, you know, Colonel Parker went as well, and Interpol would have picked him up. He was from Holland. And he committed murder in Holland, and he fled the country and came to the United States. And so we don't have extradition with Holland. So you know, he could not leave the country or Interpol would pick him up. And that's why he would not let Elvis leave the country other than to go to Germany in the army when he was drafted.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I didn't know that.
That's really interesting. All right, I'm coming to the thing in Evanston on October 18th just so I can talk more music with you. We can talk about the, you know, culture, race relations and all that too, but I want to hear more stories about music from you know, from back in the day, from the Mississippi Delta all the way to Chicago. How's that?
You got it. Well, music was created. American music, I'll put it that way. American music was created. The first form in the Mississippi Delta, you know, called the blues.
Yeah,
it was a combination of the music and sounds brought over from Africa by the slaves, and also what they would hear from their masters, you know, in the church, the hymns and songs like that, some of the folk songs that came from the UK and various parts of Europe, and they would combine that with their own and created the blues. It spread west to New Orleans and Louisiana. And evolved into jazz. It went north to Memphis and became soul. It went to Kansas City and became swing. It went to St. Louis and became rock and roll, created by my boss, the late, great Chuck Berry.
Uh-huh.
And then it went to Chicago, where it became the electric blues. Down in the Delta, everything was acoustic. And then people like Muddy Waters and T-Bone Walker and other people took it to Chicago, you know, during the Great Migration and things like that, because they couldn't get work.
Robert Johnson.
Took it there and plugged it into amplifiers, amplified it, and then it became the electric blues. And Chicago is known as the electric blues capital of the world.
And we got Buddy Guy. We still got the great Buddy Guy here.
Buddy Guy is like the last man standing.
Yeah.
Of that era. Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. This is so fascinating. Daryl Davis, legendary blues pianist, race relations expert, author, documentarian. He's part of a panel discussion, the Pro Human Tour, sponsored by the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. That's October 18th at the Double Clutch Brewery, 2121 Ashland in Evanston, 6:30 to 9:30, October 18th. Double Clutch Brewery will tweet it out and post it on social media so you can track it as well, buy tickets.
Yeah, and anybody, you know, who wants information on it, they can email evanston@fairforall.org. Fair spelled F-A-I-R. Evanston@fairforall.org and get all the information they want on that upcoming event. And I hope everybody will come out and have a chance to say what's on their mind, ask questions of the panel, and enjoy some good music.
Awesome. Daryl Davis, thanks so much for joining us. It was so much fun. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dan and Amy. Thank you all very much for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Tickets are on sale now for Freedom Summit 2022. Get yours today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Sasha Stone, writing in her Substack, runs an online outlet, news outlet, why she fled the left. I mean, just sort of building on our very interesting conversation with Daryl Davis before the news. She writes about her decision to stop dealing with the new Marxists. The weird part is I didn't vote for Trump. I don't consider myself a Trump supporter. In quotes. I just can't listen to people talk about Trump or his supporters because they're talking about a person and people who do not actually exist. They've created exaggerated versions of a whole group of people to justify their hatred, their rage, their helplessness, their hysteria. Because I know they're fighting against people who do not exist, it's hard for me to talk about it with them. Yeah. Figments of their imagination. The boogeyman politics that we talk about routinely on the show. I don't want to argue about it and I can't change their minds. There's no point. The few times I've tried, I get the exact same reaction back from people who have a very limited experience of people they pretend to know. And she goes on to add, it's surreal to watch the walls close around corporate America to shut so many people out who do not go along with the new world order the Democrats have built. And she goes on to give examples. I mean, there are myriad examples, but the collective left, the new Marxists, have decided, she writes, it's okay to smear people with these terms, election deniers, extremists, white supremacists, insurrectionists, domestic terrorists, racists, anti-vaxxers, etc. Watching them do this every day makes me feel sick. But the forces in the media and the news are too powerful. There's no fighting it. They would have to do what I did, which is to spend a lot of time on the other side, getting to know them, seeing things from their point of view, and respecting their beliefs. Yeah. Well, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. I mean, remember after Trump was elected, the announcements from these self-regarding journalists who they were going to go out into the country and meet these Trump supporters.
Oh,
who are
right.
These people? I want to crawl inside your brain. What makes you tick? I'm so interested. Because I was blindsided by his victory. Now I want to understand. Well, that lasted for about 5 seconds.
Well, when I went to Lake of the Ozarks, I met two teachers from the LA Unified School District, and they wanted to that's what they were doing. They said, we're going here. Now we're going to go to Arkansas. Then we're going to go. Because they wanted to understand the rest of America.
You have to go to hillbilly land to find a Trump supporter.
They were shocked.
They don't exist in the enlightened suburbs and urban centers, right?
They were shocked that, you know, I live in the city. You live in the city. I go, I live in the city. Yeah. And I voted for Trump.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, why? And then I explained why. And this, you know, conversation went on for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we started talking about COVID restrictions. And I said, well, we're only going back if we wear masks. And we're going to wear masks all year long. I'm like, well, you go do that. Because there's a number of studies that show the inefficiency of masks in a school setting and in other settings. And then it got a little ugly, and then I had to leave.
Right.
But, I mean, they
which
told me, but they're
basically
like,
what Sasha Stone is saying.
But they were so arrogant and so, like, we you know, so condescending. We just want to see what, you know, the rest of America is like.
Got to stand up for yourself. Got
to
stand up for yourself.
South Dakota, too, because they wanted, you know, Christy Nome Land, they called it. These are terrorists.
You're not going to be able to lean on people to completely fight these fights for you if you want to live in a free society and a society that has some even tenuous connection to rational thought. Glenn Youngkin is the governor of Virginia. He was swept in on this wave of revolt against one of these new Marxists, sort of an old Marxist, Terry McAuliffe, on the basis of not just COVID and the school shutdowns, but that was part of it. But it was as much a revolt against what was happening in K-12 schools in terms of the curriculum, the critical race theory, the sexualization of children. Well, Glenn Youngkin is acting in furtherance of who he said he would be when he ran, and he better, and he is, explaining to Sean Hannity these guidelines that the state of Virginia has put forward that school districts must incorporate in spirit, you know, in some form consistent with the broad guidelines with respect to parents' rights as it pertains to this trans movement in K-12.
Well, Sean, first of all, this is not controversial. This is about restoring power to parents. And let's just be clear. Children do not belong to the state. They belong to families. And when a child is wrestling with this kind of decision, a parent should absolutely be the primary counselor, advisor, and helper in wrestling with this decision. That doesn't mean that there's not a role for a teacher or a trusted counselor, administrator, but parents should be the absolute primary advisor. And to shut them out, to close them out of this doesn't make any sense. And that's why we pressed forward with these model policies that put parents in the primary role. And anybody who thinks that parents should be shut out, I can't quite understand where they think the decision should be made if families and parents aren't the primary decision maker with a child.
Well, he's being a little cute there. He knows exactly where they think the decision should be made. With them.
With them, right.
They've made that very clear. And he's saying, the governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, is saying, no, I mean, just a declarative statement that wouldn't have been controversial very long ago. Your children do not belong to the state. You are the primary, not a stakeholder. You are the primary stakeholder in your children's lives. You're the primary decision maker in your children's lives. And that's how it should be. Is that revolutionary? I guess it is these days, particularly in government K-12 school systems. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Keep up the pressure. That's what parents across the political spectrum did in Fairfax and Loudoun counties in Virginia. And reducing the margin of loss in those counties in Virginia for the Republican is what put Glenn Youngkin in the governor's mansion in Virginia. And by the way,
could that happen here?
Well, I mean, it's the same conversation. And this is against here. We haven't talked about this as much at the local level because we've been spending so much time on crime and taxes, legitimate topics. But this is part of it, too. We've spent a lot of time profiling parents who do stand up at school board meetings and challenge school boards and superintendents and principals and teachers with respect to this, the books in the as part of the curriculum in classes or in the library, these drag queen bingo slash story hours at libraries and so forth. And I want to update you on Downers Grove, by the way. The culturally responsive teaching methods. That's part of this governor's record. Pro-trans ideology, gender ideology in the primary grades with the books that we've all discussed and cutting the parents out because that's what the union wants and the union gets what the union wants from this governor. So, I mean, it absolutely is germane here. These fights that you see happening in Virginia, and I know many of you listening are involved in them locally and have been, like in Downers Grove, which we'll get to. But, I mean, it is yet another issue that informs the political culture, that informs the balance of power between state and family in Illinois on the ballot November 8th. And, look, you're having people step up from a lot of different quarters here because they recognize nonsense when they see it. This group, Gays Against Groomers, that is having trouble keeping its social media accounts up because, you know, they're gay men and women that are opposed to the sexualization of children in K through 12 curriculum, especially K through 3 curriculum.
Yeah, and they don't think that, you know, drag queen dances should be going on in front of children and children should be handing single dollar bills to them.
Yeah, imagine that.
All of that.
Yeah,
I mean, my God, that's an adult stuff. Can you imagine if it was heterosexuals doing that? They wouldn't allow that. But if it's a gay drag queen or a transgender person, it's just different rules for different people.
So listen to what this Gays Against Groomers representative had to say. His name is Mario, I guess. He went to the Conejo Valley School District School Board meeting. This is in California. He tweeted about it. A concerned father reached out to Gays Against Groomers asking for a voice of reason. I have two students in the district in my niece and nephew, so I answered the call. Mario, Gays Against Groomers, speaking to the Conejo Valley School District School Board in California.
Good evening. My name is Mario Presents, and I'm here as a representative from Gays Against Groomers Coalition with over 250,000 followers across social media and as the uncle of two students in your district. It has come to our attention that the district intends to teach transgenderism to children under the age of 10 without parental consent. If I were to teach your child about my sexuality without your consent or involvement, I'd be arrested. But when the school district does it, it's education. Districts are teaching transgenderism when they should be teaching science, math, and language. Instead, teachers are hiding student pronouns from their parents under the guise of gender affirmation. Can you imagine the uproar if schools were evangelizing or baptizing children without parental consent? Isn't that sort of what you're doing? You don't tuck these children in at night. You don't teach them to stand up to bullies. You don't pay their medical bills. And you certainly don't hold their hands in the hospital. These parents do. Simple truths based in science need to be upheld for our society to flourish. The gross indoctrination we're seeing is creating a lifetime of medication and hormones because you can't simply pause puberty. Men cannot become women, and sex chromosomes are encoded into the fabric of our DNA. Simply affirming a teenager's gender is akin to affirming anorexia. Both are body dysmorphic disorders, yet we don't teach the starving teenagers how to binge and purge or affirm that they are indeed overweight. However, school districts, including yours, seem to have no issue secretly teaching girls that they can be boys because they feel uncomfortable in their bodies. A grown adult woman can't get a hysterectomy without extensive medical forms and doctor's visits. But Dr. Safir, over the hill in Sherman Oaks, is willing to do top and bottom surgery, sterilizing children for life. Parents must be a part of the education process when teaching sexuality to students, and it definitely doesn't need to happen under the age of 10 years old.
How awesome was that guy? That's what I'm talking about. Cut and paste, Mario Presents from Conejo Valley.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. MF'er Spice, she of the Socialist Spice Girls, a.k.a. Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, one of the most odious people in Congress. And that's really saying something, because those are some of the most odious people in the Western world. She put this question to the assemblage of big bank CEOs before a House committee to talk about, whatever they want to talk about. But she wanted to talk about their commitment to defund fossil fuel companies. And Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan was the only one who really pushed back in a meaningful way. And it really upset MF'er Spice. She's given to profane tirades, usually in the direction of Trump or about Trump, but also in the direction of people who disagree with her as a dutiful new Marxist. Listen to the very end, though. Listen to the very end of this exchange in terms of what she wants to do, how she intends to deal with those who fail to comply with her demands. It's instructive.
Do you know, you have all committed, as you all know, to transition the emissions from lending and investment activities to align with pathways to net zero in 2050. Do you know what the International Energy Agency has said is required to meet our global 2050 net zero targets of limiting global temperature rise to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.5 degrees Celsius? So no new fossil fuel production starting today. That's like zero. So I would like to ask all of you and go down the list, because again, you all have agreed to doing this. Please answer with a simple yes or no. Does your bank have a policy against funding new oil and gas products? Mr. Dimon.
Absolutely not, and that would be the road to hell for America.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Sir, you know what? Everybody that got relief from student loans has a bank account with your bank should probably take out their account and close their account. The fact that you're not even there to help relieve many of the folks that are in debt, extreme debt, because of student loan debt, and you're out there criticizing it. Ms. Frazier, how about you?
We will continue to invest in and support clients who are investing in fossil fuels and in helping them transition to cleaner energies.
And Mr. Monahan?
Bank of America.
We are helping our clients make a transition, and that means we're lending to both oil and gas companies and to new energy companies and helping monitor their course towards the standards you're talking about.
Yeah, Mr. Scharf?
What he said.
The same thing as Mr. Moynihan said.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you, Mr. Dimon, because you obviously don't care about working class people in frontline communities like ours that are facing huge amounts of high rates of asthma, respiratory issues, and so much more. Cancer rates are so high among my communities that I represent. So I'm not going to even ask you if you're committing to ending financing of new oil and gas projects. But Ms. Frazier, Mr. Monahan, Mr. Shea, we are living through a climate crisis today. And a commitment to net zero requires a commitment to ending fossil fuel financing. It is important because I want you all to know at the end, we're going to pay the cost of the public health impact. These are people that you're supposed to be serving, the folks that you're supposed to be providing and supporting in communities. Anything else defies all logic and scientific evidence at our disposal. If your financial institutions aren't going to follow through on your own net zero commitments, then regulators, including the Federal Reserve and Congress, must step in and make them.
Must step in and make them.
Who the heck does she think she is?
This is
repulsive.
This is the approach that's coming. I mean, we're talking about climate, eco-totalitarian inspired lockdowns. Now you're talking about precipitating bank runs or attempting to, and bringing in the regulators right behind that to say, you, this is how you will invest. That's their attitude. Wall Street Journal opined on this, brought up a good point, too, in addition to Tlaib's dalliance with authoritarianism and you know, taking the Chi-Com's approach that there's no such thing as private enterprise. Those banks, those are state banks. We're your silent partner. And sometimes we're not so silent if you don't comply. The whole take your all those people that got money for student loan forgiveness should move their accounts elsewhere. The Wall Street Journal asked a question. Wait, isn't the student loan forgiveness plan supposed to be helping people so impoverished by college debt that they aren't able to save? So how do they have right. these accounts?
Exactly.
By the way, this whole ESG paradigm that's pushed by the new Marxists has real impacts. You may want to pay attention if you're a retiree, including and most specifically in the public sector, because these, you know, public sector unions that run states like Illinois are all in for this nonsense, right? They're all in for everything that the new Marxists propose. Well, here's the return that this approach is generating for retirees. You may want to pay attention, teachers and rank and file at SEIU and AFSCME. CalPERS, you know, the California Pension Fund, the nation's largest pension fund, got a scathing performance review Monday when its new investment chief highlighted the retirement system's underperforming returns. California Public Employees Pension System, CalPERS, showed returns lagging behind other pensions, other large pensions in almost every asset class during the past years, the past 10 years. Lagging behind other large pension funds in almost every asset class during the past 10 years. Board president, I'm a little disappointed, and I get it. I know there's a lot of things that go into the buckets of why our performance has been bad. Yeah, well, why? One of the things, and the biggest bucket, is you're pursuing politics over profits, and that's not great for your retirees. So maybe a little bit of a revolt from those expecting a real rate of return, even if you've got one of these unicorn defined benefit plans like you have in Illinois. For more on all this, pleased to be joined by the Capitalist Pig, Jonathan Honig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and Fox News contributor, author of a new textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan?
Great to be with you, Dan and Amy. And I'm, Dan, just as frustrated as you are. This whole ESG movement, you know, propagated by government, is impacting people's investment returns, and it's influencing companies' decisions. They're aware that the regulators are going to be pushing all these initiatives, prompting all these initiatives, and they're taking, in many cases, preemptive action, eating into people's bottom lines and ultimately impacting the economy, just as it has in Europe. I mean, Dan, I know as you and Amy have pointed out, so much of the energy crisis in Europe is due to investment decisions prompted by the government. That's my fear of exactly what's happening here. Look, government caused the worst inflation in 40 years. You don't think they could cause major bankruptcies on energy or transportation companies? Could happen.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Jamie Dimon's getting a lot of play with this road to hell comment, but and the other bank CEOs that were there are even less inspired than him, and that's not particularly inspired. I mean, the part of the problem I have with Dimon and certainly the other CEOs is, you know, their mealy-mouthed approach to these Jacobins that seek to destroy everything that somebody else built if they can't have it. And there needs to be a more consistent and pronounced response from people like Jamie Dimon and those other sheepish bank presidents that were before that committee, don't you think?
Well, damn it. Rashida Tlaib has them by the cojones, literally. I mean, they'd like to make you think that, you know, banking and finance is this unregulated Wild West with these mean bankers taking advantage of everyone. Banking is probably the most regulated industry in the country. So, of course, as you said, Congress people and Rashida Tlaib, you know, bring them and march these CEOs who are, by the way, productive, entrepreneurial, beneficial, creative individuals who help make the economy better. They bring them in to lambast them simply for political donations, for political points. And yes, I wish that some of these bankers would stand up and say, you know, madam, we're productive, we don't violate anyone's rights, we trade, we create wealth, but, you know, the government regulates them, and thus they have to placate themselves to the government. And once again, and Dan, we all suffer. I mean, this country was built on a very definitive line between the private economy and the government, which only job is to protect our individual rights. I mean, would you have Maxine Waters, Rashida Tlaib, or any of these in Congress running a bank? My God, running a lemonade stand?
No, but hey, wait a second. You wrote a book, The Politics of Ayn Rand. So I'm not letting you get off the hook with that sort of defense of these guys because the government allegedly has them by the short hairs. What would Hank Reardon do, Jonathan Honig?
Well, that's fiction. And Hank Reardon probably would have raised his voice ban, but
and even just make the arguments. Forget talking to her. Hey, let me tell you, members of Congress and the public, since this is a public forum, let me tell you how banking works. And if she cuts him off because my 5 minutes, blah, 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 then go outside and have a press conference. Everybody's going to listen to what Jamie Dimon has to say, particularly the street. So go tell them, hey, this is what you don't understand. I hope the American people will listen to me. Here's how banking works. Here's what they're suggesting. Here's what the impact would be. You know, the road to hell is a fun little flippant comment, but it requires explanation.
Dan, I would like to believe that worked, but flashback to the financial crisis. I mean, the financial crisis wasn't even over yet, and Obama was already squarely placing all that blame on who? The greedy bankers, the evil, greedy bankers screwing everyday Americans. This is the most common trope in the book.
I know.
They trotted out anytime there's any
because they don't get pushback. Of course, these guys behave as pincushions, so they're going to be treated like pincushions. You want to end the tropes. You want to educate the public. Then people who know better, you know, start talking like you know better.
I don't want to get us off topic, but I'll play a quick devil's advocate. If theoretically folks on your station started violating some FEC laws, maybe about language or other types of licensing laws, would your employer tolerate it, or would the FTC tolerate it?
I'm not talking about violating laws. I'm not talking about Jamie Dimon. What is violating a law to explain to the American public how the banking system works and what Rashida Tlaib and these new Marxists want to do and what kind of impact it would have on them? What prevents anybody from explaining why you're not getting a return on your pension investments at CalPERS if you're a public employee because they're playing politics with your money? I mean, these things can't occur in the shadows. They have to be brought into the light, and it requires people who know what's going on to explain it.
I agree with you, Dan. I mean, unfortunately, the common assumption now on both sides of the aisle is that what creates wealth? Government spending. It's government spending. It's government control that creates wealth. You know, we can't trust Jamie Dimon to invest in the right way, invest for the right communities. We can't trust, Elon Musk to do the right thing. He's busy sending rockets to Mars. He should be planting trees or something. So that's that overriding assumption that we need government to regulate. We need government to century and plan. We need government to control. And that is exactly what has contributed to today's financial crisis, today's economic calamity. I mean, Dan and Amy, both sides of the aisle sent out those thousands of dollars worth of stimulus checks. Right. Both the parties were in favor of it. And that's exactly what's costing every one of our listeners 8 to 10% of their income every single year. So here we go again. Government, as you said, regulating banks, regulating energy, regulating the rest of the economy. Just as bad, they screwed up the current economy.
But Jamie Dimon told the truth. He said stopping oil and gas production would be the road to hell for the U.S.
I mean, absolutely. I even make it broader than that, Amy. Is government management of the markets. I mean, in the old days, we used to make fun of the Trabant, you know, the old East European car that broke down all the time, or the Yugo.
Yugo, yeah.
Yugoslavia's a communist-made car, because we knew that these centrally planned, government-created endeavors were always flops, and they always are flops. I mean, people don't remember Solyndra. That was the Obama-centered green energy company that went down to the tubes with hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money. And, you know, as they said, I mean, these politicians would gladly have the government run a bank. I mean, in effect, they're already doing that with the hundreds of millions of dollars of student loan forgiveness. They're now simply in the banking business. They'll decide who pays these loans or not. So I hate to use that term slippery slope, but we're moving more and more, Dan, away from that free economy, that capitalist economy, the economy that created this country you described, and more towards that centrally planned, controlled economy of Europe, Spain, France, and all the rest.
All right. So give us some market intel insight here. We're going to limp along in a shallow recession, or is it going to deepen? And where should we hide our money from these new Marxists like Rashida Tlaib?
Damn recession. I mean, we've all, average American has been calling a recession for over a year, and yet in Washington, they still can't say the word. It's almost like they think if they just close their eyes, it won't appear. I mean, this economy really is on the heels. And Dan, what's frustrating is that despite this promise of a soft landing and transient inflation, history suggests that once inflation crosses 5%, it's north of 8 now, it takes 10 years on average to get back to 2%. So that's my real fear now, is that we're not looking at just a shallow recession, a mild recession, but we're looking very much to a period like the late 60s to the early 1980s. You know, in 1980, stock market was below where it was in 1969, 100% due to government policy, government intervention, government money printing, exactly the direction Biden's going now.
He is the Capitalist Pig, Jonathan Honig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund, Fox News contributor, the author of A New Textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan, thanks as always.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you. You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line, taking your calls with comments, compliments, criticisms, concerns, general crack pottery, we'll take it all. Speaking of general crack pottery, we've had a lot from one Governor Spaulding over the last couple of days, claiming to be the victims of so many, claiming to be the victim of so many things. He's being defamed. He's being attacked with misinformation from fake newspapers, and he's ready to just take his ball and go home. He's just not going to participate in the debates because people aren't being properly reverential to him.
Yeah, and I'm sure that somebody talked to Father Flager on Pritzker's behalf to say, hey, have a rally in front of a John Hancock, you know, where Darren Bailey's going to be, you know, renting a place until the campaign's over. And he brought with him a group of moms called Purpose Over Pain. It's a group of parents who lost children to violence. And they said that the ads that are running is just a slimy way to buy votes.
John Hancock Building does not represent Chicago. It represents the elite. If Mr. Bailey wants to immerse himself, give me a call. I'll find you an apartment on 79th Street.
Yeah. Yeah, like a Gold Coast compound represents the elite, like a Wellington, Florida equestrian farm represents the elite. Father, I mean, spare me. He rails against billionaires, and then he works in service of billionaires against a middle-income farmer. These guys are frauds. By the way, this guy, this scumbag, Michael Flager, can't even use the title father because he's a disgrace to the Catholic Church, and he's also a disgrace to decency. And it's sad that he has parishioners buffaloed by this race hustle he's been running for 50 years. Guy's just an absolute disgrace. He is a bottom-feeding demagogue. I don't care if he purports to be a man of the cloth. His behavior says otherwise. So how's it gone? How's it gone under Father Flager and Jesse Jackson and the Chicago Democrat socialist power structure for the last 100 years? How is it working for the black and brown families they purport to represent? How's it working right now in real time on the west sides and the south sides that are depopulating as black families flee this state like it's on fire, just like everybody else? Go pound it, you coward. You racist flim-flam man, Father Flager, preying off people. Everything is, if it bleeds, it leads. All they do, the Moms Against Pain or whatever the hell this Purpose. Group that he stood up is. Yeah. So what are you doing? What are you doing? You're standing with a bunch of crime victims. What am I doing to advance your public policy like you do every time you want to ban guns? What am I doing? I'm putting commercials on the air that show what's actually happening in this lawless place called Chicago at the hands of the politicians in charge to send a message to the suburbs, exurbs, and the rest of the state that under the legislation he signed, this is coming to your hood, coming to your community. So you might want to perk up. So I'm advancing my public policy position using the same real-world events.
And then he went on calling you guys racist. Stop running and condoning comments and commercials that continue racist stereotyping.
Yeah, I'm done with Father Flager. I've said all that's all there is to say about him. Now, the fat man in the governor's office, this pea hat, this coward, I'm going to pull out of the Daily Herald candidate form if they don't stop printing the papers that are being distributed, which many of you, I'm sure, have received. That everybody, the chorus, all of the important people in Pritzker's comm shop, I'm talking about NBC, ABC, CBS, WGN, Fox Chicago, the Tribune, the Sun-Times, the Daily Herald. You better fall in line. Your boss is talking to you. TV ad I don't like, that comes down. Like the Scream ad. And for a lot of stations, like the Summer of Joy ad, that comes down. The Beverly Miles ad. They want that down. I don't like it. Well, I said that's not true, so it's not true. End of discussion. Do what you're told to do. You're printing that paper? Paper you printed for 7 years? Papers you printed for 7 years? Paddock Publications, owner of the Daily Herald? Stop printing it or I'm not participating in your candidate forum. So they stop printing it.
Well, then I should ask him today, are you going to participate in the candidate forum now that they stop printing
the
papers?
Oh, he's rethinking it. He's chewing his cud. He's chewing over it. Mm-hmm. He's still a little hurt that the Daily Herald had to be instructed what to do. They should know better. All roads run through Pritzker. It's his government, and the press corps is his press corps, and everybody better do as they're told. And, you know, this is why we need to publicly fund the press. Let's just cut out the middleman. This is why they need to be directly on the dole. Maybe he can enhance the salaries of all these reporters in quotation marks, journalists in quotation marks, editors and general managers. Maybe he can do what he does for state employees. It's to pay them directly, over and above. Why not? They work for him. Him. Not you. Him. The Fourth Estate is treated by him as no different than his equestrian estate in Wellington, Florida. It's just another possession of his.
$12.5 million.
Don't worry about us. So he can demand that everybody abide his truth, and we're going to continue telling the truth about Pritzker's reign. And then you make your decision. Then the state makes its decision on November 8th. That's all we can do. So we'll continue to present messages on topics of salience, and the papers will be printed, and they will be mailed. We will get it done. It will be done. That's going to happen. No matter what he does, no matter what the Chicago Press Corps does, they can limit our reach. There's no question about that. So we'll do the best we can, and then it's up to people who want to get engaged and disseminate information, drive conversation, explain things to the marginally engaged. That's where it's at. Karen and Beecher.
Good morning, my darlings. First and foremost, I want to thank you for the energy and the inspiration you guys have been just like filling all of us with. And Dan, my goodness, I just pulled out my Will County Gazette from my post office box. I can't wait to read it.
It's a good read.
Okay.
Real page turn.
But also, speaking of inspiration, I wanted to give everybody a heads up or a reminder about our Washington Township GOP candidate meet and greet. It is Beecher, but our big township is Washington, and we want to include everybody in our GOP meet and greet. It's going to be this Saturday from 5 to 8 at the Gould Vault, like Elliot Gould Vault.
Gould Vault, got it.
618 Gould Street. And, of course, we're going to meet the fabulous Judy O'Gala, who has taken many punches in her gut by this progressive...
Well, county board member, right.
Yes. She has taken many punches in her gut from these progressives, but she is still standing, even though they redistrict her. She is still standing and fighting strong for us. So she's going to be leading this meet and greet, and we're going to have candidates for sheriff, treasurer, clerk, ROE, okay. Superintendent of Schools.
Got it. Candidate Forum, Washington Township, Saturday, 5 to 8 at Gould Vault. Got it. Thanks for the call, Karen. Sean, Darian.
Hey, Dan and Amy, thank you for all you guys do. Seriously, you guys are awesome. So I did do is you're one of your callers yesterday. I called those guys last night, electrical contractor.
Oh, the guys that were harassing this wealth manager that appeared in one of the commercials, calling him at home, calling him at his business, necessitating that he involve the Wheaton police with respect to the electrical contractor. Yes, that just some context. Right.
Yeah, the realtor guy, he called me back. He didn't answer right away. He says that he didn't, all he did was call the house and referenced the commercial, the radio commercial to the woman that answered the phone. And I guess he didn't have a conversation. I don't understand what he said.
Yeah, I know what he said.
I know. Yeah. But the other guy, the electrical guy, it was funny. Just like the other caller said, I said to him, I says, isn't there a way of just talking to somebody? Don't call them at the personal residence and, you know, insult them. He said, first of all, I didn't call them. I emailed or whatever, Twitter, whatever. And he goes, besides that, he says, Prof, and I never mentioned you guys. Obviously, he knows where I got it. He says, Dan Prof thinks he's cute. Wait till he sees my lawyers. And then so I said, brought up once again, you know, have a little decorum when you talk. You guys always want to shout everybody down. He says, by the way, he said, why don't you mind your own business? And then, and they called me the P word and called me all those filthy words. I said, that's exactly what you guys resort to. You have no basis, you have nothing, and you just try to shout everybody down. But anyway, keep it going. You guys are awesome, and we're going to keep fighting with you.
Thanks for the call, Sean. Yeah, Robert Schumacher is the electrical contractor, and he sent me, you know, profane texts as well. And he's real scary with whatever lawyer he thinks is going to come at me. Please bring it on, Robert Schumacher. And I've got all your messages, and so does the person you were harassing at his business. And as I said, the Wheaton police have already been involved. This is getting directly from the source. They consider what he was doing harassment and so forth. So, you know, keep with your hair on fire hysterics, because you're a big tough guy, aren't you, Robert Schumacher, the electrical contractor in Villa Park? Bring whatever you got, Robert. Bring whatever you got, wherever you want it, in a court of law, to the studio, to where I live, wherever you want to go, big tough guy. Carol in Moments, you're in Chicago's Morning
Answer. Hi, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, there's so little I can add to what you've already commented on, but Tlaib with her comment on cancer, does she realize that the cancer rate has increased dramatically since the advent of COVID and the COVID vaccine and all the boosters that suppress your own immune system? What's the difference between dying of cancer or freezing and starving to death, which would happen under the Green Deal? Do people realize, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, how cold they're going to be?
Thanks for the call, Carol. Appreciate it. Mike, Oak Park.
Good morning, people. I just wanted to make a comment about the how the liberal Marxists are relabeling, renaming things. I think we should call the pro-choice group, the ghouls that are for abortion, I think we should call them pro-death, not pro-choice. Pro-choice has a softer connotation. I think pro-death is more accurate to describe these ghouls. And that's all I have to comment.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, here's an example of what Mike is talking about. This is Stacey Abrams, one of the left's heroines, preparing to lose the governor's race in Georgia for a second time.
There is no such thing as a heartbeat in 6 weeks. It is a manufactured sound designed to convince people that men have the right to take control of a woman's body.
is no heartbeat at 6 weeks. That is a manufactured thing to give men control over women's bodies. Really, there's no heartbeat after 6 weeks.
I mean, she's an idiot. Does she have kids? Is she an idiot? Oh, my God.
Bob, Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for taking the call. You had a good discussion on the movie Elvis, but I got a question for you. Have you guys seen the movie Network?
Yes, you know, mad as hell, and yeah. I'm not going to take it anymore, Bob.
Well, yeah, and I would offer the comment, Dan, you are becoming the mad prost of the radio airwaves.
Yeah.
Keep it up with all the presenting the truth. If you remember what Beale said, there is no truth in television.
It's true. That is what that's what he said. I didn't even think about modeling myself after Howard Beale, but maybe I am inadvertently.
Yeah, you ought to do that. Have a good weekend.
But here's the thing, Bob. If I'm recalling correctly, it doesn't end well for Howard Beale.
No, that's the sad part
about
it.
Yeah, that's the bad part. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I got to be careful.
Yes, yeah. You do.
Oh. Chuck and Delavan.
Chuck.
Hey, look at you with two congressional candidates on today. Not to be political, but if that guy's predecessor would have given Trump $28 billion, he wouldn't have to talk about fentanyl right now. I want to thank the 28 listeners that came and partied with me at Doosterbeck's last week, and we had a great time. Delight Jewel was there. I want to give a shout-out to the Canale family. They drove all the way from Marengo. So the big party tomorrow.
Are these places like Doosterbeck's? Are these real places?
Yes.
Are you making them up, Chuck?
Yeah. No.
Right.
And the thing that was really weird was the farmer next door doesn't like Doosterbeck's. He dumped for all day from 12 o'clock all the way until we finished. He dumped raw pooage from his cows all over the field, and it stunk like hell. It was crazy. I couldn't believe it. But no pooage tomorrow because we're going to be at the Abbey. You guys be there or be square.
Thanks so much, Chuck. Appreciate it. Pooage. That's a new word.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.